Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. This is Dan and Dante, the author of The Complete A-Hole Dad, and welcome to Rare Bird Radio. Today, we are going to be all dads all the time. We are talking with blogger, author, speaker, advocate, raconteur, renaissance dad, Hogan Hilling. Hogan, say hello.
Hey, Dan. How you doing? Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to meet the A-Hole Dad.
A lot of people have said that in the past. Don't kid yourself.
Okay.
So, Hogan, I've been stalking your sites for quite a while now, so I know a lot about you. But why don't you tell our audience about all the different activities you do and all the projects you're involved with. Remember, we only have 30 minutes, so try and keep it.
Okay. I've been a dad for 25 years, and early on in my dadhood years, I became a fatherhood advocate. I've been involved with several organizations for the past 20 years on a volunteer basis. I'm the author of 4 parenting books, and I have a new book coming out that we're going to talk about later called Dads Behaving Dadly. That's not badly with a B, that's dadly with a capital D. And I was a guest columnist for the Orange County Register. I worked for the Boot Camp for New Dads program. I founded one of the first dads clubs at an elementary school in the country. Co-founded a Fathers Network of Orange County support group for fathers of children with special needs. Received a 1995 California Courage to Care Award for my work with fathers in California. I appeared on the Oprah Winfrey Show. That was an awesome time there. I was featured as an at-home dad. I also appeared on the ABC Fathers, the Story of Fathers and Sons documentary, and NBC's Unsung Heroes.
And on weekends you run NASA, right?
Yes, right.
I don't know how definitely keep time you busy. Don't question about it. And trust me, for all of you out there, if you're checking out Hogan's websites, what we'll get to later, there's a lot of stuff going on there, a lot of stuff. So, Hogan, you're one of the best. Let's talk about fatherhood. You know, what's happening with fatherhood? Where's it been? You know, I mean, I think we all know the classic archetype of a father who's, you know, fat and hairy and dopey and doesn't know what he's doing. And so, and what's that evolving into today? If you could talk about kind of where we've been.
I think today it's an awesome time to be a dad. Back in the 1990s, when I came out of the pantry and became a stay-at-home dad, my role was not embraced or actually accepted, understood, or embraced. You know, the challenges that I faced or that those dads faced was similar to what the women were dealing when they were going into corporate America and they were told to stay in the kitchen when, in our case, we were told to go back to the office. And the whole father involvement thing was very difficult for our culture to accept, and men were also having a difficult time. And there weren't many support services. I mean, there weren't programs for dads. There was no support mechanism. There were no fatherhood organizations. There are no bloggers like there are today. And I think what's really changed is that people have kind of accepted the fact that dads can nurture and do things just as good as moms, if not better in some cases.
A lot better.
Yeah.
I mean, you can be honest.
And, yes,
this is A-Hole Dad Radio.
Right. And I think the challenge now is that people – have not fully embraced it yet. But the great thing that's going on now really has to do with the men. They're much more proactive, and they're much more boisterous. They're speaking out. Back 20 years ago, most men just submitted to the fact that, okay, you know, it's not a father-friendly world, and if that's the way it's going to be, it's going to be. But now guys are starting to say to themselves, you know what, if I want a father-friendly environment, I need to speak up. I need to start acting like a friendly father. I just need to be more active in school, at home, et cetera, et cetera. So, and then all these, you know, support services that are starting to build up because men are speaking up. And also there's a handful of women out there. I want to send kudos shouts to some of the moms out there, like Jennifer Greiner, Elisa Cohen, and Lisa Duggan, who are speaking up on behalf of fathers because they realize what a disservice we've done to men.
Well, you know, you mentioned that earlier, too. You talked about how difficult it was for dads, you know, kind of maybe 20 years ago when some of them started to go home and take care of their kids. What made it difficult? Was it society's attitude, that people were looking at them as failures or, you know, unemployable?
Oh,
or was it skill set?
Oh, yeah, I mean, Yeah, it's not just at-home dads. It's just fatherhood in general. I mean, there were dads who weren't at-home dads who said, you know, anytime I was alone with the kids, people referred to me as the babysitter or Mr. Mom, as though as I was a replacement for Mom, when I'm not. I'm Dad. And it's the whole image thing, you know, the, if you look at our culture, we indoctrinate women with the notion that when you get married, you're going to marry a smug husband, and when he comes to be a dad, he's going to be a total inept idiot. They are brainwashed to
think
that.
That's not true? Is that not true?
Yeah, that's true. And so when what happens is when we have when the couple has kids, the moms start overcompensating, thinking, oh, this guy's a booming idiot. I can't leave the kid alone with him, blah, blah, blah. He doesn't know how to dress the kid. He doesn't know how to put the dishes in the dishwasher right. You know, just constant barrage of just criticism that we can't. I mean, if you took a test to see how many women would leave their kids alone with their husbands for more than 5 hours without giving them a list or any guy to babysit, they wouldn't do it.
Well, I mean, look, the truth is the guy wouldn't look at the list anyway, right? We just try and
figure
it out.
Well, yeah, that's true, right, yeah.
And I ain't asking for directions.
But,
I ain't
looking at
my wife's list. Those are my
two
rules.
Yeah. And the uncomfortableness, too, with guys was just, you know, they were getting ragged on by the guys. Oh, you know, what are you doing? You know, changing the diaper. And a lot of guys didn't know how to stand up. It was a whole confidence thing. And that's why I coined the phrase coming out of the pantry. So many at-home dads that were at-home dads couldn't even admit that they were in that role.
And what do you think happened that's allowed it? Because we all know it's definitely changed. Things are changing. So what happened? Did society start accepting them? Did dads get better in the role? What occurred?
Oh, no.
Well,
this is what happened. Because of the Internet, the at-home dad population started networking through the Internet because, you know, we were spread all over the United States. And they started this at-home dad network in 1995. We've had 18 conventions in a row. That's unheard of in the fatherhood population for guys to commit to that. And the thing that really launched it was that more and more guys were staying at home and they weren't going away. And by the very fact that their kids were still breathing and alive, meant that
shocking.
They were being successful. I mean, they're successful at raising kids.
Right.
And I think the reality has sunk in to people and going like, well, God, this guy just raised a kid. He's 18, 20 years old and he's fine. So I think these guys, I think men can father and parent just as well. If not, as you said, Dan, better than most women.
Right. And why don't you talk about the At-Home Dads Network, because that's an actual organization. I don't think very many people know about that.
No, it's the National At-Home Dad Network, and I've been a board member. I was a board member for 5 years. I attended the second annual At-Home Dads Convention, and I've been a big part of that organization. And I've seen the tremendous growth and just the commitment. It's an all-volunteer-based organization, and just Google National At-Home Dad Network. I think it's athomedad.org is the website address. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about the book because the president of the National At-Home Dad Network is actually the co-author of the book that I'm doing.
Oh, the Dad's Behaving. Yeah, we're going to get to that in a second. But before we go to that, so tell me about the At-Home Dad Network and tell me about guys getting together and drinking beer and playing pool and ogling women is, you know,
the time itself.
What do they do in the At-Home Dads Network?
Well, we do some of that. We're guys, you know. We smoke cigars. We drink beer. We, you know, we fart. We do all that kinds of stuff. But in addition to that, we are serious about being better husbands and better fathers. We have workshops there where we bring in experts from the local area. I mean, we had one woman that came in and talked about relationship building. The guys loved it because they wanted to know more how to improve their relationships with their wives. And then we brought in an expert to talk about overcoming our own egos in terms of learning how to be better fathers. And then what's really fascinating about this convention, it's different than many of the conferences that some of the fatherhood organizations have. We actually have open discussion forums where guys just bullshit. We put them in rooms and they just talk about whatever they want to talk about. It's kind of free-flowing and it's safe, non-judgmental environment. We do that in the afternoon. And then it's actually a 1.5-day event now. And then at the end of the convention, you know, there's time to go out to dinner, drink beer, shoot pool, do whatever. We also include some activities like bike riding, going, you know, like in Washington, D.C., when we hosted the event there one time, we did a tour and stuff like that. So we have all kinds. And then we do some charity work in the local cities as well when we're in town.
So what comes up in the forums? What are dads today worried about? What occupies their mind besides, you know, beer and pool and ugly women?
Managing the household, cooking, dealing with the specific challenges that each age group comes with the kids, you know, from toddler to middle school, elementary school, sex, you know, how to get more sex, you know. They're doing all the housework, and some of them really are frustrated because their wives are dealing with issues, and they're not into the intimacy as much, and dads are trying to find a way, you know, how do I bring intimacy and the romance back in. And then another
thing.
Wait
a second. You're telling me that there's women out there who do not want to have sex as much as guys? You're kidding me.
Yeah.
It exists. Okay. All right.
Yeah,
I'll take your word for it.
That, you know, there are guys that they're out there that aren't getting any for maybe 2 months, maybe years, because of, you know, relationships breaking down. Yeah, you know, and you would think these guys would get a lot of sex because they're doing all the housework, but that ain't happening. So it's another issue, you know. But the other topic, the hot topic that's been coming up is there's been so much attention to at-home dads and what they're doing that we're forgetting about the role changes that their wives have had to make. So guys are starting to bring that up and saying, hey, you know, we need to start talking more about, you know, what are our wives going through? Because they're really not talking about that because they've had to take on the role of the breadwinner, which they're not really ready for. And then when they get into it, they struggle with that whole identity. And then you have people telling them, oh, what are you doing leaving your kids alone with your husband? You should be at home being a mom.
Yeah, it is quite a turning the tables thing. I mean, I can imagine how that's become a real big problem, you know, because you just have society has perceptions about the way things are supposed to be, and when they're turned upside down, which in this case it is, if you're talking about historical perception, it's got to be tough for both sides.
Well, also the guys, back to what you asked before, a lot of the guys get these backhanded comments, and, you know, I've been told I've been a bum because I'm raising kids, and even my in-laws, I continue to look at me as a bum, and they don't even look at the fact of what a wonderful job I'm doing raising their grandchildren, because they have that whole idea, hey, you know, you're not supposed to be doing that. You're supposed to be out there providing for our daughter.
Yeah, slaying dragons. It's funny, you know, women have fought for millennia trying to say that raising kids is a full-time job, and now that the guys are doing it, all of a sudden it's, you know, it's not. You know, you should be doing something else as well. It's interesting. So, but you know what's interesting for me? I'm not an at-home dad. I go to work, you know, in an office every day. I leave the house and I come back at night. Mm-hmm. And I think what happens, like, there's even a bit of a schism in the dad community because at-home dads have a certain set of issues. But guys like me, you know, who are gone in the morning, come back at night, you know, we kind of have a little different set of issues. How do you see those two different communities interacting together?
Well, I think there has been some friction there, and we need to start embracing each other for a lot of reasons, but I think the reason the friction exists is because, it appears to a lot of working dads that I've talked to that we're trying to upstage them, and we're not, and we're there because that's a decision we made, and also, you know, they've been indoctrinated with this whole thing that, you know, guys are inept, and we have issues one time about a guy who didn't want in the neighborhood, who didn't want me caring for his daughter. His wife was okay with leaving his daughter at my house, but the guy wasn't. And
how old was the girl?
Like 3 or 4 years old. You know, and I can understand that. You know, it's a fear thing, but, you know, at least get to know the guy before telling, you know, oh, she can't go over there. It's not, you know, the whole fear of a guy watching your daughter. It's a very sensitive issue with some dads, and I also think that you know, there might be a little jealousy too. Guys wishing that they could spend more time, but you know, the only difference between working dads and stay at home dads is I think the issues are kind of the same. We're just in different roles because when I'm with my wife, the differences between we did things was still there.
Right.
You know, she would do things the way, and she wanted me to do things the way she did it. And so those kinds of issues stay there. It's just that you're at the office, and my office is the home. I remember talking to one guy, one working dad was saying to me, you know, how could you stay home? You know, I'd love to do that, but how could you stay home with these crumb crunchers, and they're yelling and screaming, and there's chaos around them. And they're acting.
I say the same thing about my employees, by the way. But
exactly. That's where I was going with this. I told the guy, I said, wait a minute. I said, don't you work with adults? And he goes, yeah. I go, do they act like children sometimes? He goes, yeah.
Exactly. They're worse. I'd much rather deal with my kids screaming.
Yeah.
At least
but I think the reason that friction exists is because guys don't network with the other. They're not communicating. I mean, if you're a working dad and you're an attorney or you're a doctor or you're in the military, you can't spend the kind of time that at-home dads spend with their kids. So what you need to do is look at that and make a friend with them and say, hey, you know, it's great to have you in the neighborhood. I appreciate you're a good role model for my kids. You know, by the way, there are times when I can't be here. Could you, like, be like a surrogate father to them? And vice versa, at-home dads could reach out to working dads and say, hey, listen, Joe, you know, I know you have a tough time. I don't see you around much, and I know you work hard for your family, man. Is there anything I can do for your kids while I'm around in the community, man? Just let me know. Those conversations aren't going on, though. That's where, you know, what we need to do is start communicating. And one thing guys can learn from women is how they network well and communicate well with each other in each community, and that's the whole point behind doing the Dad's Baby and Dadly book. Is the guys have their voice be heard, reach out, be more, you know, motivate them to be more proactive in their communities, and start letting people know I'm here and I'm here to help the community in any way I can, not just as a dad, as a volunteer, and do my part in creating a wonderful community for everybody here.
Well, you know, that's a good time. It's a good point to segue on. So let's talk about Dads Behaving Dadly. So you're coming out with a new book called Dads Behaving Dadly. Why don't you tell everybody what it's all about?
Great. Well, you know, the inspiration came from me meeting all these dads. And then when you look at the media, what we're, you know, the only time we make the news is when we're doing something stupid, which we do a lot, and we're doing something bad. So that this whole coach's perspective is people are thinking like, oh, the whole United States is filled with fatherlessness and absence fathers and deadbeat dads. When you walk out in the community, in the neighborhoods, there are more great dads than there are bad dads. So I said to myself one day, I said, you know, look at these guys, they're behaving badly. And we need to start recognizing these guys. And so what I asked a few dads to do is start submit stories. And they started submitting stories, and they were very powerful. And I said, oh, yeah, I'll turn this in the book. So at the time, I was friends with Al Watts, who came up to me, and, you know, we were just bullshitting away. And he says, I want to be an author someday. And at that time, I'd written 4 books. And I said, okay, well, you know what? Why don't you become my co-author? So I invited him to be the co-author, so I helped him live his dream. So the mission of the book is to rebrand the image of fatherhood. The title of the book is Dads Behaving Dadly, the real stories of the new fatherhood culture, which we talked about earlier. And quickly, the goals are to highlight all that is good about dads. Number 2, provide good role models for other dads to follow. 3, help the public recognize and appreciate fatherhood. Number 4, acknowledge the benefit of a dad's presence in a child's life and respective communities. And number 5, validate a father's contribution in parenting.
Very noble. And we should also tell the audience that, of course, one of my stories is going to be featured in Dad's Behaving
Dadly. Hey, Dan's got a great story, everybody. You got to read it for him.
Yeah,
you know, he's a great a-hole dad.
As much as we can. This is 30 minutes of talking about me and how great I am. So now, while I'm sure my story will probably be the best and the most popular story in the book, will drag it into the New York Times bestseller list. Why don't you talk about some of the other dads who are writing in the book and, you know, who they are and what's their point of view?
Sure. Yeah, the website is dadsbehavingdadly.com, and we'll be posting on Facebook page as well. In fact, I'm going to feature you one day, Dan, believe it or not. I'm going to show you the photo.
You should be featuring me every day, Hogan, every day, I would imagine.
But basically what we're doing is we're looking for success stories of fatherhood, like an aha moment with your child in which you taught your child something or the child taught you something about life and fatherhood. And we want the stories to include your feelings about that moment. And some examples we have of one dad that submitted a story about finding out that his wife had miscarried, dad teaching his child to swim, taking his son to his first ball game, taking care of the baby for the first time, handling an emergency situation, getting your child to take medicine. One dad who's an introvert had to come out of his shell and be in an act with his child, and it really was a moment for him of growth as a dad. And, you know, it was just dad showing a compassionate, sensitive, nurturing side without losing their masculinity. And, we, by the way, we don't have a feminine side. I know I don't have one. But three,
well,
you know,
maybe there's a little, it's stuck. It's way deep down in there when you're in the bathroom late at night. But you know, you had a great quote. You had a great quote on your website, which I thought was fantastic. And it was something about how a dad saying, "I'm not Mr. Mom, I'm Dad." And I thought that really resonated with me because there is a part, you know, when you're being a father is that you feel like you have to be a mom, but you don't because we have a different way of parenting. Why don't you talk about what that means?
Yeah, we're not a replacement for mom. And I think where people miss the point is moms and dads parent differently. It doesn't mean it's wrong. It's just different, and we need to embrace that.
So now the book itself, it's there's going to be a book, right, that people can buy.
Yes.
Is this going to be a springboard for other activities and other projects you've got going on?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's going to. You know, we're going to see what the response is. I'm hoping to have a second book come out as well because stories are starting to come in. We still need more stories. The book is not printed yet. We're still collecting stories. So the deadline's March 31st. Do I have time to quickly just share some of the dads that
we got all the time in the world, Hogan. The stage is yours.
Yeah, one of the most touching moments for me was to hear from Ben Petrick, a former Major League Baseball player. He played for the Colorado Rockies, and at 22, he was diagnosed with Parkinson's. It was devastating. His story is about how, you know, here is this celebrity dad. All of a sudden, they thought he was going to be the next Johnny Bench, and all of a sudden, baseball was taken away from him. And he's talking about the story about how all of a sudden he's left to just be a father. And he thought that was devastating, and he had to work with it. And he goes, you know, my God, it's okay for me to just be a father. It's a really powerful story, and I encourage you to go to his website, benpetrick.com, P-E-T-R-I-C-K, and learn more about him. And then we have, we have regular dads, but I'm just highlighting that some. We have another dad named Trey Cheney. He's the one that writes about his wife having a miscarriage, and he's an actor, he's a rap singer. He actually is going to allow us to use his new rap song called "Dedicate Father" to be part of the Dad's Behaving Dadly movement. And then we have Wing Lam of Wahoo's Fish Taco, a national restaurant chain, who shares his story about finding out that his teenage son is gay. And then we have a wonderful story, a hilarious story about titled "Nailing Fatherhood." This is a dad who is teaching his 5-year-old daughter how to use a nail gun.
Right on.
And
you mean a nail gun to
hilarious.
Paint your nails? It's painting her nail gun, right?
No, actual nail gun that you put the nails into the wood.
No, I understand.
Yeah,
I understand.
And then you know, and some of the other items. I got a long list of stories. They're just incredible. And you know, so what we're doing is inviting to all dads across the country. We've actually had dads submitted from Australia. Two of them are in the book. From Canada as well. We have dads from Canada. We're expanding to England. Also, I want to note that, listen, we're asking dads to write, but we're not asking you to be writers. Just write. Al and I will do the editing. The content of your story is more important than the writing. You submit the story. We think the content is good. We'll edit it, send it back to you. You review it, approve it, and we'll put it in the book.
Yeah, and you know what? While we're talking about the book, you know, we're talking about blogging, and one of the big things you had mentioned earlier is communication. How dads don't talk. You know, there's not a lot of networks out there. Guys just don't talk, period. But you know, they especially don't talk to each other, and they certainly don't talk about their feelings. And so you have a whole rise of this daddy blogger world, which is maybe competing for space with the much larger and much more ferocious mommy blogging world.
Mm-hmm.
Who are the guys who are out there blogging? Like, if I'm a guy looking for trying to find a community, who are the guys who are blogging who are really making a big influence in the world? And what are they trying to say?
Well, off the top of my head, Chris Routley, Jeff Hay, Chris Bernhold. You know, the thing is, what's great about the blogging thing, and again, back to what you said, is, you know, face-to-face, guys don't do well communicating, so the Internet has actually been a valuable tool. Because these guys just open up on the Internet because it's not face-to-face. But what's happening is guys are starting to realize the importance of networking. And more bloggers are coming to the surface to the extent that right now, actually, this weekend at Dad 2.0 Summit, it's the second, I think it's the second year running. I went last year, or the third year running. I went last year. And it's basically a dad bloggers convention, and they've sold out every year. And guys are over there networking. And the big thing about the whole dad blogger thing, it's waking up. It's awaking corporate America up. Last year when I went to this convention, one of the so-called experts on marketing, I was talking to him. He goes, you know, Hogan Woolley missed the boat on this. I go, no shit. I said, you know, you guys have not been marketing to dads because you think, oh, yeah, moms are spending the money. Did you forget that some dads earn the money? It's their money, too. You know, it's just the moms are writing the check, but the dad's spending it, and you're not tapping into that. And he admitted to me, he said, you know, we have not done any surveys on how dads buy. And he says, that's so stupid from a business point of view. That's half the freaking market.
Right.
So they jumped on the dad bloggers bandwagon, and now they're asking guys, you know, what would you buy? You know, why don't you buy this? So it's incredible to see the turnaround in corporate America and how they're showing much more support for dads, not only in the surveys, but starting to realize the significant changes that need to be made in ads like Tide. I mean, Chris Routley was the guy that, again, here's a guy that voices concern. The Tide commercial, and I think it was the Huggies commercial, were very offensive to not only dads but to moms, to make dads look like bumbling idiots. And Chris wrote this letter and said, you know, you guys need to stop doing this, and they changed the commercials. That's huge.
Yeah, you know what commercials I remember? I thought they were funny, but I too was a little offended. Remember they had those Carl's Jr. commercials where you had that guy who would, like, be in a supermarket and just be looking at an onion and just have no clue how to deal with the onion, and then, you know, you go to Carl's Jr. and be happy. And, you know, I felt the same way. I felt a little pissed off. I'm like, wait, you know, I know what a fucking onion is, you know?
Yeah.
I know how to cut it up, you know? And I was like, what do they actually think about it? And I'll tell you, you know, I was blogging. I don't have a blog currently, but I had one for a little while. Only, you know, my mom and, you know, my editor read it. So after a while, I said, I don't know. But in any event, what I found a lot was when I first started reading blogs, you know, I just found that they just always seem to be so overly sensitive. You know, they always seem to be, oh, my wife is so great, and oh, my kids are so great, and oh, this is every, you know, like guys like clearly putting on some type of show for whoever they're putting on a show for. Then as I started getting deeper, you know, I started to find the real blogs, you know, the guys who are really putting forth real feelings and real adventures and experiences they have that really resonated for me as well.
Well, there's a revolution going on where guys are starting to realize it's okay to be vulnerable and still keep my masculinity.
And that's exactly what I was getting at. I was going to ask you, do you see bloggers like expressing feelings, which, you know, like you said, guys are loath to do, but yet doing it in a way that we're comfortable with, like we're still, we can be guys and say, I'm a little scared or I'm not sure.
No, I'm going to be honest with you because I'm an honest guy. The blogger activity is growing, but again, you know, men are starting to adjust, and it's going to take a little time. And they're still not where they need to be, in my opinion, in terms of their vulnerability. Because a lot of guys are still blogging and talking about articles, you know, that's more kind of they're just kind of using it as advertisement and, you know, keeping their ad people happy. And, you know, they're really not coming out. They don't really talk about the nuts and bolts of father, what they're really feeling yet, because they don't feel it's safe yet. Especially now in our world, once you put it out there, Dan, you know that. It's out in space forever.
Oh, yeah. I'm still hearing about things I wrote 2.5 years ago.
So I think, you know, again, I think the magic words are safe, non-judgmental environment. And that's the problems in our community, and that's what I'm trying to create with this Dads Behaving Badly thing. Is going to give me a vehicle to go out there and talk to hospitals, to schools. You're not divorce workshops. You know, wherever fathers are mingling, they're not making it a safe, non-judgmental environment because of the preconceived notions we have of men. One is, men don't have feelings. They don't hurt. They don't feel the pain. They don't feel the struggles. Bullshit. We feel it, and every time we express how we feel about that, the response you get is, oh, suck it up, or number two is, how could you feel that way? Or
you can just go get drunk. That's always another
way. Yeah, but, you know, you really, and or it's followed by criticism. And so and even when a guy says something that he's frustrated about, it's viewed as a complaint. Now, when a woman does the same exact thing, people put their arm around them and say, you know, I'm sorry to feel that way.
Nobody's putting their arms around us, Hogan. God damn it.
We need a little more love, you know.
Somebody put your arms around her. Anybody.
Yeah,
please.
But, you know, in all seriousness, what I'm seeing now, with the men, they're putting, you know, now when a guy says, hey, I'm struggling a little bit, Hogan or Jeff or whatever, we actually see men going over there and say, hey, you know what, I feel your pain. Guys are admitting that they actually feel like other dads. And they're going, hey, you know, what can I do for you? I'm sorry you're feeling the way. Guys are starting to not only say this to other guys, but other guys are starting to hear this. And I will tell you, in early 1990s, when I did the boot camp from the dads program, where we had expectant dads come in, one of the questions I asked at the end of the two-hour session, where it was just free-flowing, they're talking about their issues, I said, you know, share one thing that you learned today from this group. And the number one answer has always been, I thought I was alone. I thought I was the only one. So many men feel like this is only happening to me. But when you sit in a room and see 20 or 50 other guys talking about the same thing, it's a wake-up call and going like, ah, shit, I'm not alone in this, all the stuff that's happening.
Yeah, we just hope we're doing it better than the next guy. That's all.
Yeah.
A little bit. Anyway, okay, so what's the future? What's the future of the dad community and the dad blogosphere and just the whole dad network? What's going to happen these next couple of years? What can we look for?
I think you're going to see more dad events in major cities across the country. I think you're going to see more collaboration from the bottom up because, you know, guys, like there's, like for example, I think in elementary schools, like dads clubs are really thriving now. I mean, they've been around for 5-6 years, and more and more dads are getting engaged. And I think you're going to see more dad events. You're going to see an increase in the at-home dad population. I think a big thing is you're going to see moms start advocating for fatherhood because they're realizing now that they've done a disservice to themselves by not supporting and helping dads. Because the more you help dads, the less it takes away from your, you know, the burden that you keep carrying.
Yeah. No, I think those are words of wisdom
it's great for the kids. You know, the kids need to see two parents working together, not against each other. There's such a huge communication gap. And my last point is I think that communication gap is going to start shrinking. And you're going to see a coming together of men and women as parents. And that's great to see.
And divorce rate will slip below 60%, you think? Maybe down to 58?
Well, you know, that's another we'll see what happens. You know,
we'll talk about that the next show. We'll talk about that next show. Yeah. Okay, where are you going to be? Are you going to be anywhere in the next few weeks? Are you going to be speaking any place or appearing anywhere?
No, not now. Like I said, again, the book isn't in print yet. We're still collecting stories. I encourage everybody to go to dadsbehavingdadly.com and just start submitting stories. And then once the book the book is scheduled for release, Father's Day 2014, confident that we're going to have enough stories. And if we get more stories than we need, we're going to do a second edition. You know, we're starting to plan now for some tours, hopefully after Father's Day. One of my objectives is to tour the United States and visit every dad who submitted a story in that book and highlight them as I go away. So we're working on the Dads Behaving Dadly tour. And again, I just want to recognize all the wonderful dads that have already submitted stories. I really appreciate all the work that they're in, including you. You know, especially Dan and Dante, you know, the great A-hole dad. Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, Hogan, thank you so much for your time. I have been Dan and Dante. I am also available at danandante.com. You can find me at Amazon or Barnes & Noble or wherever offensive books are sold. And that's our show.
Thanks a lot, Danny. Keep on daddying, guys.
Thank you.
You'll ever do. Two can be as bad as one. It's the loneliest number since the number one. No is the saddest experience you'll ever know. since you went away. Now I spend my time just making rhymes of yesterday. Because one is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. One is the loneliest number that you'll ever know. One is the loneliest number. One is the loneliest number. One is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. One is the loneliest number, much, much, much. Divided by two.